The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Honey, the online shopping platform that helps consumers save time and money, is building a Boulder office and looking for software engineers to join the team. Find out more at joinhoney.com/careers. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We have a unique startup and tech community here on the edge of the Rockies, and we want you to know about it. The Boulder Tech Podcast features conversations with leaders, thinkers, and influencers, sharing their views on what's happening in Boulder's rapidly evolving tech scene. These interviews were recorded during the 9th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind, anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. For episode number 14 of the Boulder Tech Podcast, we speak with Corey Cohn, co-founder and member owner of Dojo 4, where we've been recording most of these Startup Week interviews. Among other things, our conversation touches on the fundamental importance of meditation as it relates to business, the changes Corey's noticed during the better part of a lifetime spent in Boulder, why having a resident DJ is one of the best things to happen to Dojo 4, and why your company might want to consider it as well. Talking about Dojo 4, what's the point of having a resident DJ?
Oh, that's a good question. So, I don't know. Let me
just interject that, that I'm the resident DJ.
Yeah. Joel is the resident DJ here at Dojo 4. And that happened without any planning. It happened spontaneously and sort of, I would go so far as to say, auspiciously. And I think it's a really good example of sort of like the personality of this place. Like when things go really well here, that's what it looks like. But I think it's more about personality. So my startup, this business, came together super spontaneously, super, I don't know, I could even say kind of originally pretty incoherently. It was sort of like the chaos, the lack of planning, or maybe not lack of planning, but just sort of like not based on any real planning or vision. That's on one side of the spectrum of a way to describe it. On the other side is a sense of like inspiration, doing what's needed as it's needed. So responding to demand or responding to auspicious coincidence as it arises, and actually just taking advantage of the resources that present themselves. And instead of sort of having this real set sense of like, this is what a business looks like, this is how you run a business, these are the people that should be there for these reasons because it makes the most financial sense or it makes the most like strategic business sense, actually instead sort of responding to what humans, the people in our community and our relationships have to offer, and then in some ways capitalizing on that. So in this case, having a resident DJ to me was a reflection of Dojo 4's good merit of being an open place where people feel invited. They feel like building software isn't just about numbers. It's about people. It's about relationships. It's about imagination. It's about interconnectedness. It's about, I mean, these all sound like really froofy words, right? But I think our business is based a lot on having a good life and having a good experience. And not that that experience always feels pleasant, but having some sense of like integrity in our relationships and also having a good time and having fun. And so I think the reason you showed up is because we were open to that. And then if just some other person who knew as much about good music as you do, which there aren't that many, but let's say someone else showed up and it wasn't a good personality fit, they wouldn't be a resident DJ. It wasn't like we were out looking for a resident DJ. It was sort of more like we're open to things that feel like a good fit. That's how we found our best clients. That's how we found our best colleagues. And it's not like we have like some secret strategic plan. It's more like we want to be around good things and good things want to be around us. And
going back to what you were saying about how Dojo 4 sort of tries to get away from doing things the way they should be done, having a resident DJ, and not to harp on this example, but it's a pretty good example. It makes no sense for a business to have a resident DJ, but as it turns out, it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways for the right kind of business.
Yeah.
I mean, we should state clearly and for the record that Dojo 4 is a software development company. You build apps and...
We're pretty nerdy.
Yeah, it's very nerdy in a fun kind of way. But I would say when I talk to people, when I mention that I'm associate, you know, work out of Dojo 4, and people are like, and this is 100% of the people. Oh, that's that co-working space.
Yeah, yeah.
And why do you think that is? Why do people think that Dojo 4 is just a co-working space?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is because it started that way. Dojo 4 was just supposed to be a co-working space for designers and developers. Let's all have a space to work together. And I think that that never worked. Right away, I think it was 2 weeks into it, potential clients started coming through the door and saying, like, I need smart people to build this piece of software. And right away, there was a sense of the four original founders were like, we should just be an agency. So that's where I think a lot of the kind of lack of strategy or sort of more emergent quality comes from, is that it was never, this was never one, two, three, four people that sat down and said, let's start a software agency. I will say along the line, we've become more strategic. We've thought things through a little bit more over the years. And I think, I mean, we're still here and it's been 8 years. So something's working. I'd say a lot of things are working, but I think it's really, we don't market ourselves as an agency. Then that's why people probably think that we're a co-working place, is because we have an open door policy, is sort of a strong word, but like people come work here, friends, strangers, like a few times people with like backpacks on and say, I'm a programmer and I'm from Japan and I'm here and I heard through like GitHub that I could come work here. I went, sure, come and work here. So I think that's a little bit unusual. And because it's unusual, people can't wrap their heads around it. They're like, well, then people must be paying for co-working space. But no one has ever paid to use this space as co-working space. It's just that we let people use the space as needed, and we let people use it for community stuff, but also just for working here. And I don't think we've ever had to ask anyone to go somewhere else, because people don't abuse that at all. People come and work here sometimes. And I think that's why people get this kind of vibe of like, it's a co-working space, but it's just because it's unusual, maybe a little eccentric, and people have a hard time wrapping their heads around or making sense of like how that would work and also be an agency. But our business model is 100% purely a software agency.
You were saying earlier that a big aspect of the Dojo 4 ethic is this whole life, the work-life balance. And that's a theme that has been common in pretty much every discussion I've had this week in these interviews.
Oh, interesting.
Asking people what makes the Boulder tech community, startup community, what sets it apart from all of the others. And a big part of that is that emphasis on the work-life balance. And why is that such a big thing here in Boulder?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people have moved to Boulder from places where there's this real sense of like, in order to feel like a successful person, you have to be making a ton of money. And in order to make a ton of money, you have to work your ass off all the time. And that like, if you're working less than, I don't know, 60, 70 hours a week, that like you're not killing it. I mean, there might be part of the Boulder community that has that. I don't know those people. but there's more of a sense. I think one thing in Boulder is that we're not an urban place and we're not likely to become urban for quite some time. So I think that's part of it. And that there's a connection with the outdoors, just inherently with where it is up against the mountains. I think the history of Boulder, I'm from Boulder, I was born here, and it's really different now, as you know, but it's sort of, it's was, university town, but also hippie town. That's why my family lived here. There are students of Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche who started Naropa University, Tibetan Buddhist meditation community. And that's like in the DNA of this place. So it's also, there's that part is part, you know, the meditation, mindfulness, contemplative piece of Boulder's history is still imbues a lot of it. Well, even if people don't know that that's part of the history, it's still, it's kind of like got into the DNA of this place. And then there's also just stuff around kind of like natural foods and stuff that I think also came out of the hippie movement. And then Naropa, which came out of the contemplative movement, has a lot around poetry, the beat movement, you know, Allen Ginsberg being here, Anne Waldman. And that kind of, even though people that move here and don't necessarily know about it might not know that, I think it sort of does imbue this place. And then also the university, and that there's kind of, I would not say that that Boulder is a very intellectual place, but there is this sort of sense of like, this is a place that's, you know, has this academic thing going on. And that also affects the startup community in ways that aren't necessarily apparent.
You know, as someone who grew up here, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this because, yeah, Boulder was a hippie town back in the day and sort of counterculture-y. And for years now, I've been saying, yeah, that aspect of Boulder that you think of when you think of Boulder, it's not really Boulder anymore. But now, after having these conversations with everyone over the course of this week, I'm seeing it's just evolved. It's still that open hippie communal aspect, but it's been, but it's somehow been transformed into the tech community, because Boulder is really, it's not a hippie town anymore. It's a tech town, in addition to being a university town, a lot of other things, but it's primarily, I think, a tech town now.
Well, I think maybe like because I've had the same feeling, sort of like, oh yeah, Boulder is not fringy. It's not weird. It's not counterculture-y, that kind of thing. But I think in a comparative way that actually it's pretty radical compared to a lot of places that are based on, where the economies are based on tech and the startup economy. It's pretty radical to have, you know, it's like the classic thing where people are like, oh yeah, Boulder startup business meeting on mountain bikes. You know, I am not a mountain biker, but I like to be outside and do that kind of thing. And I think that is kind of radical in a way. It's like a new kind of radical, which is like, I mean, I really hope that this is true, because I think that it could very easily just become about like making as much money as possible, doing stuff that actually doesn't really matter, you know, like building the next way to like get your booze delivered to you or whatever. Not that we wouldn't mind having booze delivered to us sometimes, but you know, like I think the way that if the Boulder startup community makes good on Boulder's history of being a more radical place of breaking boundaries and incorporating more of a sense of humanness, then I think what it's going to look like is it's going to continue with more of a connection with the outdoors, which inherently has, it's like about human relationships, also having better human relationships, having more of a sense of like, even the fucking diurnal cycle of like, I'm not going to work until 7 p.m. because it's getting dark. So there's some sense of, yeah, I want to be outside. I want to exercise my body. I want to tame my mind. I want to exercise my mind. And also, I want to solve real problems. So I think that's the potential that the Boulder startup community has, is like, we can go down the same road as many startup communities in the United States and around the world have done. And, you know, and it can be done in this like beautiful setting of Boulder, Colorado, where we're right next to the mountains. And we can, but we can go down that same path and just have it be about like, you know, quick exits and making as much money as possible and having that money be very concentrated amongst few investors and that kind of thing. Or we can make good on this history of Boulder as sort of a more humanistic place and have startups address real problems that are helping real human beings and still be profitable and beneficial for society at the same time. So that, I think, is the potential. And then Boulder could like make good on still being a really cool place, or we could go down the road of just like, you know, sort of becoming a suburb of Silicon Valley. And
where do you think we are on that continuum?
I think it's really hard to say. I don't know yet. I mean, I feel really encouraged. I also feel like, you know what people say, Boulder is a bubble. And I also feel like within Boulder, I live in a bubble. Like you and I, you know, Joel, are like, we live this like, you know, or at least we come to work in this really nice place where our families can come here and our kids and our partners and our dogs. And we've got like flower beds out front. And so I sometimes get this sense of just sort of like, we can make money in this really nice environment and everything's okay. Not that it's easy, right? But I think that's kind of bubbly too. So I don't really know. I'm not sure that I have a good perspective on it. I think Boulder has a lot of potential for the reasons that we've been talking about. It's like, I think the background in contemplative interests, the background in relationship to nature, and being kind of a smaller place where people really know each other and trust each other and love each other gives us a leg up, but I don't know how it's going to go. How do you think it's going to go?
I've been somewhat heartened in the last few days from hearing how important it is to people, how everyone sees this give first, openness, accessibility. People seem to really value that.
Yeah.
And really appreciate that. And a lot of these people who did have come from the coasts and gravitated to Boulder or wound up here for whatever reason. And they're just like, man, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it's always possible to lose sight of that, of course, but
maybe we don't know how good we've got it. And that's why we complain about it sometimes.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's what's been great for me in having these conversations is it's given me fresh perspective on Boulder and just like, yeah, you know, this place is pretty special. And not just because of the backdrop of those flat irons, but because of the people who are here. And the demographics have changed over the last couple of decades, but I'm still seeing a lot of friendly people, and you can complain about the lines or the driving and the traffic or whatever, but you know, the traffic's really not that bad. And
no, it's really not. I mean, I think in this conversation though, we do have it really good here. We
yes.
know that like we have this really nice life and every place has its own flavor, but I think you can't in this kind of conversation not mention that. Of course it's really nice because there's a lot of really privileged people here mm-hmm. with a ton of money. And there was just recently some like of those articles that comes out every year, every few years saying that the happiness, self-reported happiness quotient in Boulder is the highest in the country or one of the highest in the country. And I was talking to a friend of mine about that and she's like, well, yeah, of course it is because when you're not around difference, if you're just like insulated by sameness, then it's really easy to report happiness because you're not ever faced with any kind of actual or psychic sense of conflict because it's like, I'm surrounded by everything that's kind of like me or, you know,
right.
something like that. I don't know. I was just thinking recently, I was packing up some stuff in my house and I found this photo of my mom holding me when I was just under a year old. And I can tell from the picture exactly where we are. It's Boulder. It's probably 1976, 1977. And we're in the Dairy Queen, which is now where Santo is, maybe. So next to Ideal Market on Broadway and Alpine there. That's not the interesting thing about this photo. The interesting thing about this photo is that she's in a line. So there was already lines. Guess what, Boulder? There was already lines for Dairy Queen back in 1977, let's say. But looking at the people in the line, there was more different kinds of people in this Dairy Queen than I usually see in a whole day or week in Boulder. There was like, you know, my mom really looks like someone who helped start Naropa, as you can imagine. She's got a scarf over her hair and she's kind of wearing flowy clothes. And the guy standing behind her is like a tall, dark-skinned man with an afro. And then there's someone who's like wearing a suit and maybe looks a little bit straight compared to the other people. And then there's like someone who also looks more like fringy down and out. And I don't know. And there's all people that just happen to be waiting in line to get ice cream on a hot summer day. And I mean, maybe I'm like immune to it, but I do not see that kind of sense of different looking people in one small area in Boulder anymore. And I just think that that's another place where we have a lot of potential, mm-hmm. and that it feels really good now. And I think that we can really, you know, like, this is a great, beautiful, paradise-like place to live. And that one way that we can make it even more like that is to be a little bit maybe more like Dojo 4, where we just have an open door and we make it easier for people to live here in a way that feels more inclusive.
You grew up in the Shambhala community, contemplative community. How do you express those contemplative roots in your work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I have a hard time seeing the ways that I do just because I grew up with a certain kind of worldview and sense of like a toolbox of things that I can use in my daily life for, yeah, having like a better relationship with my mind, I guess, or maybe like a slightly more clear-sighted relationship with my mind. I don't know if it's better. Definitely, I think Dojo 4 is a reflection of both Aira and I do have some relation. Like, Aira practiced in a contemplative community for a while, and I think, you know, still identifies that way. And and Luke, same thing. Like, there's definitely a thread at Dojo 4 of people who have that kind of sense of relationship to, like, impermanence, the mind as, like, a plastic but essentially empty quality or thing. And so I think that definitely there's a reflection of that at Dojo 4. It's a hard question for me, but I think the first thing that I always think of is the sense of, yeah, impermanence is a big thing. And I think that how that's such a huge thing to say, but I think it has all these daily examples, which is just like not taking things too seriously, right? Like, it's hard to get my panties in a super bunch if basically I don't see things as like 100% solid and lasting, and that, you know, things are kind of circumstantial. There's causes and conditions, and in the end, everything changes. And so it's hard to like get real solid about things, and also to even have a sense of like a real strong sense of good and bad, because those things change a lot over time. And I think if you don't have a real strong sense of like, this is good and this is bad and this is lasting and this is, you know, even something I can rely on, like a sense of like, all I can rely on is that things change, right? And that there's some maybe underlying nature of goodness too that I think comes with that. But if you sort of see things as essentially impermanent, unsustainable, what I mean by that is like you can't hold on to anything for very long. And if you do, it's just gonna make things harder and harder and harder. And that underlying that is just some sense of like things are basically pretty good. Even things that are hard are pretty good. I think if that's your worldview, it just comes out, right? Like, it affects the relationships that I have with my clients, with my colleagues, and it draws certain kinds of colleagues and clients and other ones that just don't feel that way or can't relate. It's really clear right away. They're like, yeah, you guys are weird. And I don't think they'd say, you guys are, you know, Dojo 4 is weird because you guys are like Buddhists or something like that. Because I don't, you know, I don't even necessarily identify as a Buddhist, but I definitely identify as like a meditator or, you know, someone that thinks that humans are basically good.
I think, you know, I don't have as much of a background in it as you. I didn't grow up in it, but being in Boulder and working in places where, you know, that were connected to, or if not in the center of, the sort of spiritual, I could say community, I could also say industry. You know, my feeling is that the natural human state is to just be. And that doesn't mean sit on a Zafu and do nothing but meditate all day. It means taking that out into the world and doing whatever is required. But you're not really stepping outside of yourself in a way or becoming something that you're not in order to do that, if that makes any sense. And I feel like it's a very cool aspect, a very appealing aspect to me about Dojo 4 is like that sort of the vibe here is, yes, we come here, we work hard, we try to make a better world, but we also laugh a lot and eat a lot of snacks and pet dogs, and there's no real intention behind it other than to just, this is us. These are humans coming together, living and grooving together in a natural way.
I think if you don't, if there's some inherent sense of like things are not solid, it's really hard to be too serious, right? Like, I mean, unless you have a super nihilistic response, to me, the natural response to impermanence is like a sense of humor, right? Because what's the other choice? Mm-hmm. And because it's fucking funny, like that we try, are like attaching ourselves all the time, even though it's like nothing lasts. So it's sort of almost funny to just watch ourselves as humans, like get attached and then it changes and then we get attached and then it changes and then we get attached and it changes, right? And so that's like inherently pretty funny. And if things are pretty funny, well, then that comes along with like a sense of joy, even though things are so hard too. And I think when I hear you say that about like just being, I think in some ways, like it's been the greatest resource for me as a business person is to be a good business person. You have to be really responsive. Like you can't have this sense of like, this is the only way and I'm going to barrel through no matter what, because you're going to find yourself like having gone in a direction that then is like, you can't make money and support the business doing it anymore. Or you've built a staff that's like based on something that, you know, was real a year ago, but isn't real anymore. So you have to be kind of like really aware of what's going on. You have to have a true sense of direction and like, you know, stick with things, but you also have to like be open to how things are changing and arising and, you know, who comes through the door. Does a potential resident DJ come through the door? Well, you have to be able to like actually see that instead of just like, oh no, I'm in such a tunnel of like what I think a good business is that I can't even see what's going on around me. And so I think having a contemplative practice background really helps with that, right? Because you're not saying I have to be more open. All you're doing is recognizing your mind as essentially like a pliable, inseparable part of the world. You know, it's like not this solid thing. And as soon as you do that, you're just much more open to see. Like you might decide this person came through the door and I don't want them there, but at least you saw that they came through the door. Or you might say they came through the door and that's such a like unusual thing to have someone here as a resident DJ, but how fucking cool is that and how great. So that's the way in which I feel like there's a reason why meditation and contemplative practice is becoming so much more popular in the business community, is because it makes you better. Not just at business, but it's like the master skill that makes you able to do all these other things, like have better strategy, build better teams, you know, be a better negotiator, inspire better work out of people, inspire more innovative processes, that kind of thing. So in that way, I think like, yeah, just what you were saying is like the inherent natural way for humans to just be actually is an amazing business skill.
And to really, as you were saying that, I was thinking it's not just to just be, but to be in flow.
Mm-hmm.
Because now that I think about it, just being sounds sort of static.
Like you're just sitting, on the couch. Yeah.
But to be in flow, your life moves at different rhythms at different times. And rather than fight those rhythms, you acknowledge them and respond accordingly. In a way that doesn't, you're not having to contort yourself so nobody has to twist themselves into a pretzel to come to work every day at Dojo 4 because it feels just as much at home here as it does at home. And as someone who, in my work history, I've worked at a company, sounds true, where it was very much a community. It was a lot like Dojo 4 in the sense of just like you were encouraged to be yourself. That's why you were there in the first place. And so there was a work, pleasure. What's the difference? It's all the same thing. And then I've worked in places where that was not the case. And that really sucks.
Yeah.
And so it's really great to come to be again at a place like Dojo 4 where it's just like, it's just a flow. I come in, I go out, and I'm the same person all the time. And in a lot of ways, being here has made me a better person and put me more in touch with that myself.
Well, the thing that I think would be super cool, sorry to interrupt you there, is what is this thing that we can say instead of work-life balance? Because to me, work-life balance is creating a false dichotomy.
Right.
And I'm not saying that, like, for, you know, many, 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 if not the majority of the people in the world, there's a very strong contrast between what they consider to be their work and what they consider to be like the so-called rest of their life. But I think if we're talking about that anyways, about having a balance there, it'd be really cool to like find some kind of term that overcomes that false dichotomy. And is because, for instance, we have this here at Dojo 4, I think, and you said it really nicely, which is like many of us feel as comfortable here in this building at Dojo 4 as we do in our own homes in a lot of ways. It's like our daytime home or something like that. And I, you know, it's like I have a really close relationship with my family, and time that I spend with my children and my partner is more important to me than I think probably anything else. On the other hand, I would say having young children is a lot more work. It feels a lot more like work. You know, when I come home from, quote, work, I'm like, oh, man, Dojo 4 was easy. Like, right. Like getting, you know, dinner into two kids and then getting them to bed and washed and, you know, like being present for them. That's a lot of work. So in some ways it's like, well, which one is work? And, you know, it changes again over time. It's like, that will be different soon as my children get older and that kind of thing. But I just, maybe you'll think of this at some point. It's like, what's a term that we can say that's not work-life balance, because that creates this sense of like there's work and then there's life. Whereas for hopefully for a lot of us, that has like a much more fluid quality to it.
Yeah, maybe it's just life.
Right.
And work, you know, and I mean, work is part of that. And so anything you'd like to say in closing about anything?
Oh, I had one thought when I was thinking about the future of the startup community in Boulder and how we can be like a little bit more on the vanguard of things, just because we have a lot of resources and support to be a little bit more innovative here, potentially. And one of the ways that I see the Boulder startup community being radical and making a real big impact in the startup, international startup community, is by having alternative ownership models. So Boulder has already a lot of interesting businesses that way. Dojo 4 just became a cooperative. And I think there's a lot of thinking that way in terms of diversifying ownership and breaking the model of just sort of like venture capital and the profits from a company generally benefiting mostly the founders and the investors, but thinking about that a little bit more creatively. And one of the ways I see that going is in terms of diversified ownership, but also in terms of steward ownership. And I'm not going to say that much about it. For people that are interested, they can look it up. There's a lot of interesting things going on in the world there. But this idea of sort of like a permanent trust, like I own this company, and working with investors who are interested in seeing companies last for like a really, really long time instead of a turnover and an exit and a turnover. So I see there a lot of potential there, and I see a lot of potential for economically, environmentally, and humanistically more sustainable companies coming out of Boulder because of steward ownership and diversified ownership.
Well, that's a strong close. And we didn't even get to talk about Dojo 4 turning itself into a co-op last year. That'll have to be for another episode. We'll have you back. Corey Cohn, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joel.
That was Dojo 4's Corey Cohn. Read her blog and learn more at dojo4.com. And follow Corey on Twitter at Corey Cohn, CoreyKohn. Episode number 14 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week University Track sponsor, the University of Colorado at Boulder. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Matter, Zayo, Google, and Boulder Engineering Studio. We're also presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio and to KGNU Community Radio for the recording gear. Our intro music is by Echodeck, that's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Hear more at echodeck.com. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@thevibrarian.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.